Pasta.
Right, our first close-up of the year, and we head west of Asia today with Anthony Bubalo from the Lowy Institute. Thank you very much for coming in, Anthony.
It's a pleasure, Waleed.
We're starting our west of Asian excursion for the year actually in Israel, and it's a hell of a time to do it. This country that's just had elections recently, the results of which are still reverberating certainly through the country and probably around the world, trying to figure out exactly what all the permutations of of that election will be, and what the coalition government is that's going to form will be, and what the relationship with the United States as a result of that will be. So there's all that to discuss. But we've kind of been trumped by a news story today, Anthony, because there's all this, we can call it more than speculation, I think, that Israeli jets have now hit targets in Syria. What do you make of that?
Yeah, who would have thought something happening in the Middle East?
That's right.
Look, I mean, it is what it is. No one's kind of confirmed it yet. It sounds certainly plausible. The Israelis and, in fact, everyone else have been watching very closely what's happening in Syria, and particularly what happens with Syrian weapons and especially Syria's non-conventional arsenal. I think the concern here would have been that some of those weapons, whether non-conventional or particularly sophisticated conventional weapons, might have been being moved from Syria into Lebanon by Hezbollah. And the Israelis would be concerned that, you know, that one day they'll end up being kind of fired into Israel. So it certainly doesn't surprise me. It certainly sounds plausible.
Well, the account you've just given matches very much what US officials have told the New York Times anonymously, that they think the airstrike was aimed at a convoy of anti-aircraft weapons that were bound for Hezbollah ultimately. Yep. So that seems to be the subtext or the pretext. But what's the effect then in Syria? I mean, you don't need me to remind you there's a civil war going on. And the Assad regime, I suppose, will be looking to rally support. This might be a way of doing it.
They'll try and do that, but I think it's way past that stage now. I mean, they are neck deep in a very bloody conflict with their own people. It's an insurgency, a civil war in many respects. So I don't think this is going to change anything at all in terms of their ability to try and kind of hang on and survive. I don't think it's going to improve their chances.
All right, then we'll move on, shall we? If that's the way you're going to be about it. Look,
okay.
I am... No, that's fine. Your analysis makes perfect sense. It's quite extraordinary, though, that Israel managed to do this when it's kind of like a contrast to the incredibly fragile, fractious state of Israeli politics, which has been thrown into sharp relief as a result of the election that has not really yielded a winner. I suppose Netanyahu hung on, but we don't really know exactly how he's hung on. Just give us the lay of the land first.
So, I mean, you know, this is very... Well, it's not typical of Israeli politics, but it's the normal thing that happens after an Israeli election. To form a government in Israel, you've got to win 61 seats in the 120-seat parliament, the Knesset. No party can ever do that on its own, so it's always about forming a coalition government. The big news story out of this election, the election last week, was that Benjamin Netanyahu's party lost 11 seats, and his ability now to form an ideologically coherent and more stable coalition government is now more in question. So, and what you also have seen is this kind of shift towards the centre left. So, centre left parties have done better, and you've seen the arrival of these new political players on the scene, particularly Yair Lapid, who former Israeli journalist, kind of star journalist, in fact, star TV personality, who formed his own party, has now run the election and did a lot better than everyone thought he was going to do. And Naftali Bennett, who was already in the Knesset, who is a former businessman, who's a settler leader of the Israel settler movement, and whose party, even though it didn't do as well as people thought it was going to do, has also done well. So it's this kind of sense of two new major players on the Israeli political scene.
Well, close run thing, and I know you've got a guest that you brought along who's going to help us unpack all this, and particularly what it means for the relationship with the United States in a minute. But close run thing, because if you've got Netanyahu and you add Bennett's seats, and then also you add the vote of Avigdor Lieberman, so here you're talking about sort of that right-wing hawkish block. You get to 60 seats.
Yep.
So it's one seat short.
You need more than 60. And, you know, usually Israeli governments want to have, you want to have some buffer because you know, over the life of the Israeli government, you'll usually lose, you know, you might lose one or two coalition partners. You want to give yourself some safety so that no one coalition partner can threaten you and say, well, you know, if you don't do this, then I'm going to walk out. Mm. So, you know, you're always looking for the broadest possible coalition, balanced against that idea of, you know, trying to make it as ideologically coherent as possible, so there aren't too many fights within the coalition.
And of course, the context for all this is a feeling, I think, within Israel and around the world, anyone who's watching this, that there isn't a great deal of warmth between Barack Obama and Benjamin Netanyahu. And so there are questions, I guess, about what this will mean for Israeli policy in the future. So these are the things we want to explore. And as always, I can rely on you to find someone with impeccable credentials to help us explore it. Anthony, who you got?
Well, today I've brought Chemi Shelev. Chemi is a veteran Israeli journalist who's been around the Israeli political scene a very long time, written for a number of newspapers. At the moment, he actually is based in New York, where he writes a blog for the Israeli daily Haaretz. The blog's called West of Eden, and you know, one of the particular things he focuses on are Israeli-US relations, and he's joining us now on the line from New York.
West of Eden joins West of Asia. I love it. Chemi, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm interested, firstly, to get your take on the election result. Is it true, do you think, to say, is it accurate to say that the Israeli public have really expressed a view that brings Israel much more to the centre as opposed to the hawkish right that we've perhaps seen over the last few years?
I think, first of all, that when you're looking at an electoral system in which there are 34 parties that participate, and in which the votes move from one party to another, and you can't really keep track of who moved where, it's very difficult to offer a coherent interpretation of why the voters did what they did. The only thing you can look at is the bottom line. What were the results? And the results were that out of 120 seats in the Israeli Knesset, 5 seats moved from the religious right to the center-left. That's the extent of it. So I don't know whether that really means that the Israeli body politic made some major seismic shift as it's been depicted in some newspapers. But when you look at the significance of what happened, then it becomes more significant, more important. One, because, first of all, I have to correct you, the right-wing bloc that Bibi leads, the natural ideological bloc, has 61, not 60, which gives Netanyahu the theoretical possibility to set up a government without anybody from the outside. But it's true, as Anthony said, that's the last thing he wants. Because then not only is he beholden to every party, he's beholden to every single member of his coalition, which is an impossible situation to be in. So he has been weakened. That's one definite result. Two, another thing is that Yair Lapid, insofar as he is a centrist, it's not very different from the centrist party that participated in the last elections, Kadima. So you can't say that Israel has become more centrist. But the difference is that Kadima was filled with former Likudnikim, people who were on the right of to the right of center of the political map, whereas Lapid's list has a lot of lefties inside the list. So the makeup of the parliament is more centrist and more leftist. And I'm differentiating that from what the voter intended and what the voter wanted, and I don't think that's really something that's decipherable.
Chemi, the other thing that kind of people talk about is that you know, to the extent that there has been a kind of a shift to a centre or away from the right, it's been mainly on domestic and on socioeconomic issues rather than on you know, international issues or kind of the Israeli-Palestinian issue or Israeli-Arab issues. Is that true?
It's true in a general sense. The whole Palestinian peace process issue, which sort of people who are outside of Israel is mainly the the main prism through which they see Israel, was almost non-existent in the election campaign. There aren't very many disagreements. Yes, the left wing thinks that that we're heading towards a one-state solution and that the two-state solution is almost dead. And yes, a lot of Israelis in the center think that Netanyahu has mishandled relations with the United States, but generally speaking, that was not a main issue. The main issues were indeed domestic, economic, social issues, and there's another point to be made, and that is the common denominator. There are many common denominators between Bennett on the far right and Lapid, But another one is that both of them represented new faces, and I think probably even more than becoming centrist, if you can say anything about the Israeli voters, is that they were tired of the old establishment party, the main one being these days Likud, and they wanted an alternative.
Well, I suppose the thing is, whatever it is that's driven this result, the result will have consequences that have not necessarily anything to do with the motivations of voters that are international.
And
so this U.S.-Israel relationship, the question around whether or not the new makeup of this parliament will force Benjamin Netanyahu to move to a more centrist position that Barack Obama is perhaps more sympathetic to. That's certainly the fashionable analysis. Do you think that's correct?
I think it's correct up to a point. First of all, I think that Netanyahu and Obama have no choice in the short range, in the short term, but to get along with each other, because they are facing three major international regional crises that both are heavily invested in, and that is of course Iran and its nuclear program, Syria, which was in the news today, and Egypt. And on many of these issues, Israel and the United States have either common interests or at least shared concerns. And I don't think Obama and Netanyahu really have any choice but to get along with each other until the Palestinian issue becomes paramount. On the other hand, you have to take into account that by all signals emanating from the White House, Obama has no intention of making the Palestinians a major issue, as he did in the first in his first term. He's got other things that worry him.
Hemi, we've talked about how the election was fought around very much domestic issues. What's happened in Syria, what may have happened in Syria, is a reminder that there are a lot of foreign issues swirling around this as well. Do you think that'll have any impact on the coalition negotiations at the moment?
Well, of course, there are already cynical Israeli columnists who are convinced that part of the motivation of carrying out such a raid, and as an Israeli has to say, if it was indeed carried out, was to sort of spur the coalition partners into lowering their demands and being more agreeable to joining a coalition. I think psychologically it will have an effect, especially if there's follow-up to the attack. If it remains a solitary event, then perhaps not. But if there's tension, the more that the tension mounts, the more that the parties will be under pressure to finish the coalition negotiations and to get on with it.
Well, as always, it's a very fragile exercise. Hemi, it's been wonderful to get your insights. Thank you very much for staying up late for us. I know it's very late where you are in New York. I appreciate your time. Good to talk to you.
You're quite welcome.
Anthony Bubalo from the Lowy Institute West Asia Program Director there. Thank you for coming in as well. It's always good to talk to you as well.
Great pleasure, Waleed.